good afternoon on this Flag Day. Let's have a flag salute, please. Thank you. We do have a quorum. We have all five board members here today. And this is a special meeting, which means that we will only have comment on the item that is on the agenda. I have a bunch of comment slips up here. If you would please silence all your electronic devices. There are comment slips out in the entryway. If you would like to make a comment, please fill one out and bring it up here to Monique. And this is going to be a great day. Mr. Groover, would you like to introduce the item and then we'll do public comment?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. Item 2A, a discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 23-2017, certifying the final subsequent environmental impact report for the Cambria Sustainable Water Facility. Thank you.
Thank you, General Manager Groover. Let's get started with public comment on these items. Unless, do we have a presentation first? I don't see there's anything.
Yes, Madam President, we do have a presentation, and AGP is in the process of loading that right now.
Oh, okay, great, yeah. Wonderful.
So if whatever the board's pleasure is, it'll only take a second, and then we have representatives from Michael Baker International here.
Okay, well, I'd like to let them make their presentation before we take the comments, because people might want to comment on those.
All right.
Who's got a good joke? It can't be this quiet in the room. Come on. This is a serious thing, I agree. I didn't mean to joke about this. Looks like we're loaded up. Jerry, would you like to introduce?
Thank you, Madam President. For this agenda item, we have a brief PowerPoint by Rita Garcia, who has been our project manager for the subsequent EIR and is very familiar with the final EIR that is today's topic. With her today is their chief biologist, Tom McGill. Tom is in the blue shirt here. So without further ado, I'll just go ahead and allow Rita to go to the podium and do her presentation. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to respond further. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. You want to do the presentation without interruption and ask questions after? Is that how you would like prefer to do it?
Okay. Whatever the board's preference.
Okay. Well, why don't you do your presentation and then we'll have questions after.
Okay. Wonderful. Good afternoon, President Rice. A pleasure to finally meet you, members of the board, district staff, and audience. My name is Rita Garcia with Michael Baker International. As Bob said, and I am serving as project manager on the Cambria Sustainable Water Facility project EIR. And this afternoon, I will be discussing the draft EIR, in summary form, the final EIR, the responses to comments, and steps moving forward.
Thank you.
So while we're waiting, as Bob mentioned earlier, Tom McGill, who's a senior biologist on the EIR, is available, and also Mr. Glenn LaJoy, who served as project director, is here, and the three of us will be available for questions. Okay, it's working. Excellent. So this slide summarizes the EIR process, and as shown, it really includes five basic steps, which began with release of the notice of preparation, which communicated to the public the district's intent to prepare the draft EIR. It was followed by a public review period, which is usually 45 days. In the case of the project's draft EIR, it was over 60 days. Oh, pardon me. That was followed by responses to comments received during the public review period, the actual final EIR that has just been made available to the board, and then the findings and resolutions. So as shown on the slide also, there was ample opportunity for the public and agencies to provide their input concerning the project. It occurred at three stages: at the NOP, during the draft EIR, and now at the final stage. And as also shown on this slide, we are in the fourth and near the final stage of the EIR process, which is at the final EIR. So the draft EIR that was released addressed seven environmental topic areas: aesthetics, air quality, biological resources, cultural resources, hydrology and water quality, land use, and local coastal program compliance, and noise. The approach to the project's analysis concerning the baseline conditions was that the analysis assumed the conditions on the project site that existed prior to construction of the sustainable water facility. Concerning the impact analysis, the approach that the draft EIR took was to assess the impacts in two groupings. The first grouping was to assess the impacts associated with the sustainable water facility, and that is all the project components that had already been constructed. The second grouping was to assess the impacts associated with the project modification, and that included the mitigation measures, and those were the project components that were yet to be built. So again, concerning the project modifications, it really involved three key components: two mitigation measures and repurposing of the evaporation pond. Concerning the mitigation measures, there was mitigation measure AES-2, and that involved removal of the five mechanical spray evaporators. It involved decommissioning the evaporation pond, disposal of the RO concentrate into Baker tanks, and ultimate disposal of the RO concentrate at an off-site disposal site. Concerning mitigation measure Bio-3, that involved relocating an existing surface discharge structure to the San Simeon Creek bank, and at that discharge point, installing ArmorFlex to protect the creek bank. These mitigation measures reduced to less than significant levels impacts associated with aesthetics, biological resources, and noise. For example, concerning the evaporation pond and mechanical spray evaporators, these mitigation measures resulted in that impacts associated with their operations would be avoided. So again, here, this is one of the key project components that was analyzed as a project modification, and that involved repurposing the water storage base, the evaporation pond, into a water storage basin, a pump station associated with the storage basin, a surface water treatment plant that would be situated immediately adjacent to the advanced water treatment plant, and pipelines connecting the surface water treatment plant to the repurposed basin. Okay. This isn't clear, but the blow up in the white shows that the surface water treatment plant is proposed immediately adjacent to the existing advanced water treatment plant. And immediately adjacent to that are the three Baker tanks that would retain the RO concentrate until such time that it's disposed of off-site. And then again, the evaporation pond would be repurposed, it's shown in the purple, as a water storage basin. So the draft EIR, as I said earlier, did go through an extensive public review period. Usually it is 45 days. In this case, it was extended to 65 days. During that time frame, we did receive 8 comment letters from public agencies and 216 comment letters from persons and organizations. In addition, we received 5 comments during the meeting that we held at this very location. All of those were compiled, and the final EIR was released on May 31st. Concurrent with the final EIR's release, we submitted to each public agency who commented on the draft EIR the district's proposed responses to significant environmental points that they raised. Okay, and just to go over a little bit more what the final EIR includes, the final EIR included a list of all the public agencies who commented on the draft EIR, including and as well as the persons and organizations. It included each of those comment letters. It included the district's proposed responses to significant environmental points raised in those comment letters, and it included an errata to the draft EIR, and the errata summarizes for the reader any editorial changes to the draft EIR that occurred as a result of the comments received on the draft EIR. Finally, the final EIR also included the MMRP, or Mitigation Monitoring and Reporting Program, and that is a mechanism that's used to ensure that all of the mitigation measures that are in the EIR are actually implemented. It's required by state law, and it identifies not only the measure, but the implementing party for implementing that measure, the milestone for implementing that measure, the mechanism for implementing that measure, and then it allows for signatures and a confirmation that each was completed. So based on our review of the comments that we received and are included in your final EIR, you know, we have concluded that none of those comments raised to trigger recirculation of the EIR. None of the comments that we received are included there. And none of them constitute what is defined by CEQA as significant new information. And really, the basis for that determination is further detailed in this slide. And it really is that the basis for recirculation not being triggered by the comments we have in the final EIR is that none of those involve changes in the project or environmental setting. None of those provide significant new information. None result in new or substantial increase in environmental impact. None result in new or substantially different mitigation measures. And overall, the draft EIR's conclusions remain valid. So moving forward, the next step is that prior to approval of a project, the CCD by CEQA is required to make several certifications. One certification is that the final EIR was prepared in compliance with CEQA. A second certification is that the final EIR was made available to the decision-making body prior to their consideration or approval of the project. And finally, that the final EIR constitutes the board's independent judgment and analysis of the project. So these certifications then become part of what is known as the findings document, and the findings document along with the final EIR have been made available to the board, and additionally they will be made available, the final EIR has already been made available to the county, but the findings similarly will be made available to the county. And with that, I'm gladly answer any questions that you may have on the draft or final EIR, and the rest of the Micah Baker team is available as well.
Vice President Sanders.
Thank you. Madam President, members of the board, I had a telephone discussion with the district's counsel, Mr. Carmel, this morning. We have a procedural issue with regard to the adaptive management plan. And I would suggest that we have Mr. Carmel outline that procedural issue for us and give us a recommendation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Vice President Sanders. As you know, we got the updated adaptive management plan on Monday, and it wasn't posted to the website until yesterday. As a result, the public agencies, the Coastal Commission, and the public haven't really had an adequate opportunity to review the adaptive management plan. And as a result, we're recommending that after you take testimony and have questions answered and are satisfied today, that you continue this to a date uncertain, and that we, during that time period, make the adaptive management plan available. People can review and comment on it, and then we come back and certify at a later date.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. That advice is understood. I'd like to hear from the board members, and we will take testimony today and have questions answered. Is there any thoughts from the board right now with that? Okay, then let's go to public comment. First up is going to be Mike Lyons, followed by Christine Heinrich.
Thank you, members of the board and my fellow Cambrians. Petitions are only as valid as the bases on which they are proposed. And there could be as many as 20,000 signatures on a local petition. It wouldn't make it any more valid if the bases are not correct. Please stay the course in this procedure. You should know that most of the communities support you, even though a small, very vocal group has made some very serious opposition to it. Please stay the course. Your decision was right when you made it several years ago, and it's right now. The future, our futures, will depend on the wisdom that you show when you do vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lyons. Christine Heinrich, followed by John Rocky.
Good afternoon. Many Cambrians and public agencies submitted comments on the draft environmental impact report, and overwhelmingly the final EIR's notation in response is that this comment does not address the DSEIR's adequacy or raise a significant environmental point. As such, no further response is necessary. Discussion over. Simple and succinct, but it ignores the many issues that have been raised by the DSIR and the public's concerns. The requirements for construction of permanent public works projects are promulgated to protect the public and the environment. This project was originally constructed under an emergency permit from San Luis Obispo County. It was rushed into place without the usual oversight. It obviously overstepped the limits of the emergency permit, which were specifically to serve existing authorized water connections only to abate the emergency within the CCSD's service area, i.e., not to serve new development. The CCSD board, in convoluted reasoning which effectively misled the public, built a permanent public works water project that was never authorized or permitted. This final EIR is one of the steps required for the application for a regular coastal development permit, for which the district was required to apply within 30 days after May 15, 2014, more than 3 years ago. Changing the name from an emergency water plant to a sustainable water facility took place without public discussion or even notice. Although the board now says it changed the name in March 2015, the first time that name appeared in the local newspaper, The Cambrian, was on December 23, 2015, more than 6 months later. Several features of the plant have already failed, and these are the ones that are addressed as new, but not enough to trigger a new EIR. The blower fans and the brine pond stand out. The CCSD's inability to manage the project was brought into public notice by the Regional Water Quality Control Board's hundreds of notices of violation. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in public money have already been wasted on those aspects alone. The many ways in which this project was unnecessary and poorly considered do address the DSEIR's adequacy and raise significant environmental points. The economic impact of this plant is yet to be fully felt. The original installment sale agreement, which is an unusual method of financing a public works project, is another result of the rush to construct the plant without adequate preparation. Cambria's small population is now encumbered with $9 million in debt. The $4 million grant, which the board promised would be applied to the principal loan amount, was instead used for the many cost overruns for the project. Costs continue to escalate. In April 2017 alone, a month during which the plant did not operate, it cost over $123,000. There's no end in sight. While dollar costs are not specifically part of the EIR, the economic impact is. These continuing costs will inevitably drain Cambrian residents' finances, and the effects will ripple through the community. We've come to this decision point of certifying this unresponsive document to ignore the environmental impact of this project, and I strongly urge the board to vote against certifying it.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Next up, John Rocky, please, followed by Thea Tyron.
Good afternoon, President Rice, members of the board. My name is John Rocky. I'm the Regional Water Quality Control Board staff person assigned to oversee most of the permits.
Sorry, that's not good.
Okay. That's quite all right. I'm not going to take 3 minutes. With me today is Thea Tyron of our office. She's our enforcement coordinator. I'm here today to offer our comments on the recently released errata portion of the SEIR you are considering and hearing about today. Specifically, I refer to pages 12-4-7 and 12-4-8 of the errata, which addresses the repurposing and decommissioning of the brine pond. The first bullet point of section 3.5.2.1 states, quote, the RO concentrate would be allowed to naturally evaporate over several seasons to minimize the project's environmental impacts associated with emptying the evaporation pond. Once dry, the residual solids would be vacuumed via vector or a similar truck for hauling and pumped out of the evaporation pond, and the residual slurry would be hauled away for disposal at an appropriate Class 2 waste disposal facility, end quote. As you know, the surface impoundment is subject to a tentative cease and desist order, which is scheduled to be heard before my board on July 13th in Watsonville. Tay and I are here representing the prosecution team in that case today. I'm here to state for the record that the Water Board staff do not agree with the errata's decommissioning procedure that allows liquids in the surface impoundment to evaporate before residual solids are removed. The cease and desist order, if adopted as proposed, will require the district to submit a detailed work plan with milestones and a timeline within 30 days of the adoption of the cease and desist order for cleaning and repurposing of the surface impoundment. So in order to save everyone time, we're letting you know now that evaporation of the liquids in the surface impoundment will not be an acceptable option, and the district should propose an aggressive timeline for removing all waste in the pond. We also recommend that the references to evaporating the liquids in the errata sections 3.5.2.1 and 3.5.2.3 be removed. Thanks for your attention to this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Rocky. Thea Tyron. Ms. Garcia, did you get those notes on that? Thank you very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon, President Rice, members of the board, and members of the public. I'm just here today because the tentative cease and desist order is related to how the pond will be, the surface impoundment will be decommissioned. I just wanted to clarify some of the process for our board hearing, which is going to be on July 13th. Originally, in some older documents, it said July 14th, so I really wanted to make sure that I highlighted that it's a change date, July 13th. It's at the Watsonville City Council Chambers at 275 Main Street and fourth floor in Watsonville. And the public has an opportunity to comment on that tentative cease and desist order until June 21st. All this information is available on the Central Coast Water Board website under the enforcement section of our website. And I just wanted to highlight those procedures. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you two coming today. Next up is Crosby Swartz, followed by, I don't have a name on this next one. It's the address is in Oceano, so there's no, okay, thank you. Thank you, Miss, thank you for waiting, Crosby.
I'd like to take objection to the statement in the agenda package that there's no fiscal impact has been identified for this report that you're proposing, that you're considering today. This report specifies that you'll be rebuilding the evaporation pond, designing and building a new surface water treatment plant, purchasing 3 or 4 storage tanks, and you will be essentially forced to truck the water, wastewater away for disposal, which could result in 11 trucks per day while the plant is operating, which over the period of a year could add $1 million or more to the cost of operating this plant. I think there needs to be some discussion with the public about what the cost of doing all this stuff is, and is that satisfactory to the public. Certain aspects of it, like the surface water treatment plant, are not actually essential to the operating of this facility, and so a decision has to be made about whether this all is worth the cost. And I realize that the cost is not necessarily an environmental problem, but it is a problem that the community should be aware of. And I still haven't seen any discussion of what the cost of what's before you today will be. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swartz. Next up,
Hi, my name is Steph Wald, and I live in Oceano. Please accept the
welcome.
Following.
Wait, let me reset the time. Thank you.
I know I'm going to take more than three, so I'm just going to hand over my comments, but I want to highlight a few things.
Leslie Ridgers is up next. Thank you very much, Ms.
Please
Wald.
Accept the following comments on the project, formally scoped as the Cambria Emergency Water Supply Project. I'm contributing comments as a private citizen interested in steelhead trout impacted by the project. I'll base my comments for you, but the additional comments will be given to the clerk about baseline information, protocols for reappearance of steelhead trout, some operational considerations, the critical habitat element of the EIR, absence of comments from California State Parks, and some looking ahead items in addition to what you all end up deciding today. Baseline. The lack of baseline information upon which the SEIR is based to evaluate project impacts is deeply troubling. No creek habitat typing was completed to generate data sets upon which to gauge project impacts. No comprehensive watershed-wide steelhead abundance and distribution survey was conducted to evaluate how population changes related to the project's actions would be reflected in population numbers in the future. Such a study provides strong representation of the general distribution and relative abundance of steelhead and presence absence of other species for San Simeon Creek. The approach is repeatable and would provide a good baseline. In addition, I believe it is incumbent upon the CSD to demonstrate a pattern of drying and reaches downstream of the project footprint that conforms with data provided to substantiate claims of historically dry reaches downstream of the project. Regular flow monitoring and mapping of dry reach downstream of the project site would establish a robust baseline. I see the yellow blinking, so I'll just briefly say, related to Bio 15, how does the district intend to determine whether or not steelhead reappear? What protocol will be used? Will the district employ a Ditson camera to monitor and record steelhead presence and absence? Will a human monitor be present 24/7 to determine reappearance? If a mechanism of detection is not specified, mitigation measure Bio 15 is meaningless. I see the blinking yellow light, so I'll urge you today not to certify the EIR. Thank you.
You have one more minute.
Oh, well, a lot of it is detailed, and I'll say in looking ahead, giving the combined uses of Santa Rosa Creek and San Simeon Creek to provide water to the community of Cambria, I believe it is in the best interest of the community and the district to pursue a habitat conservation plan that covers both watersheds and enables the district to protect itself from incidental take of steelhead trout. Grant funds are potentially available to pursue to fund an effort such as this. I will continue to urge public trust resource agencies to follow up on the comments they've previously made and to strongly recommend they respond to the district's comments to their comments to ensure that a continuous record of jurisdictional matters remains in play. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wald. Leslie Richards, followed by Susan Johnson. We don't have a procedure for doing that, but I do want to hear from everybody today, so I will give a little bit of grace time on it. But we don't have that procedure here, so.
So you're saying you will not give my time on the decision?
Correct, but I will not necessarily cut her off at 3 minutes exactly.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. My questions are
answered
again about the adaptive management plan by your council, so thank you. I don't have a question.
Susan Johnson, followed by Tina Dickerson. Sorry, your time's up. I'll restart the time.
My name is Susan Johnson. My husband and I own the schoolhouse property directly across the street from CCSD's Wellfield. Our property is referenced in CCSD's response to comments document PA-12-108. As a small parcel that was sold by Warren, a former one-room schoolhouse, APN 013-062-005. Pieces of information contained in CCSD's response to comment letters, PA4, are incorrect, and I believe these errors must be corrected prior to any documents being finalized and approved. PA 12-133 describes the flood event early 2016, downplaying the extent of the flooding issue. I witnessed water from San Simeon Creek pouring over CCSD's levee, water falling into the well field, flooding not only the field, but the well houses and their attached storage sheds recently posted as containing hazardous materials. The flooding was so pervasive, the residents directly east of the field was flooded. Later, CCSD employee Justin Smith shared with me that the storage sheds next to the wellhead stored chlorine. In the same PA-12 document, CCSD again understates the second flooding problem when the field flooded in early 2017. I had understood the district had mitigated the problem, yet the field flooded once again. A water rise of 3 feet over the entire well field. Naming these events as unique flooding or atmospheric rivers of precipitation downplays the seriousness of the flooding. The third misleading. Same document, page 108, paragraph 2, last sentence states 1.5 acre feet of water, AFY, is provided to a small parcel sold by Warren's, and that's true. Then paragraph 3 contradicts paragraph 2 using a bulleted list. CCSD lists Warren's water use proportionate volume, use versus allotment, in the calendar year of 2016. Here, CCSD erroneously includes as one of the bulleted items my school's house usage, 0.8 use versus 1.5 AFY allotment. This is incorrect. 1.5 acre feet of water is attached to my property, not Warren's. Water rights, as stipulated in the settlement agreement, run with title. We own the parcel, not the Warrens. The error of language and data continues. Same paragraph and footnote 6. It appears CCSD is crediting back Warren's unused water during 2016 calendar year, including 0.7 AFY savings from the schoolhouse's allotment. In the summer of 2016, CCSD's employee Justin Smith visited us at the schoolhouse, stating we had overused our water allotment of 1.5 acre feet, and Warren had also overused his water allotment as well. To substantiate their claim of our overuse, CCSD gave us water metering data for what appears to be CCSD's 2016 fiscal year, July 1st, 2015 to June 30th, 2016. Based on that accounting, CCSD charges the schoolhouse property, me, hundreds of dollars for overuse during their 2016 year. In review, in 2016, schoolhouse property owner, me, is charged hundreds of dollars for overusage. Now, when choosing 2016 water data for this report, CCSD uses calendar year data, showing the schoolhouse allotment is underused, allowing CCSD to credit back 0.7 acre feet a year of unused water. That's wrong, and it misleads readers. In summary, I'm certainly not a chemist, but allowing flooding to occur not once but twice in an area where chlorine is stored, the second flooding after CCSD claimed to have mitigated the problem, and then to understate the flooding event in their report is wrong. And I'm not an accountant, but commingling fiscal year data and calendar year data to get a number that is advantageous to CCSD is wrong. I recommend to the board to delay accepting the report until accurate data is corrected.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson. Tina Dickinson, followed by Laura Swartz. And Ms. Garcia, you are getting these notes down. I see that you're furiously writing. I just want to make sure.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
I will be able to hear you.
Good afternoon, yes. Board.
I'm sorry.
We're already frustrated enough. Can we start again?
Please do.
Good afternoon, Board. Since I have sent my comments to the board, to Mr. Greshens, Ms. Garcia, the board, and others on the final subsequent environmental impact report, I am not going to reiterate what I've already stated. But let me say this. I feel the board and staff have made a grave mistake in not reaching out to interagencies while going through the process of acquiring an EIR and coastal development permit. I recall Dean Flores at a meeting here last year advising the board to keep in contact specifically with the Coastal Commission, to work with them in reviewing the big issues to avoid roadblocks in the path ahead. I also recall Director Sanders having something similar to say shortly after returning to the CCS board of the importance of keeping the Coastal Commission involved in the process. I recall being very pleased to hear their thoughts related to that process. It would appear that CCSD has not done a very good job in communicating not only with the Coastal Commission, but a number of agencies. CCSD, in fact, did not respond in writing to comments made on the initial study mitigated negative declaration by a number of agencies and members of the public of 2014. At the request of Coastal Commission staff, a meeting was held subsequently in August of 2014 with interagency staff members present. To my knowledge, Coastal Commission staff has reached out to this district a number of times as the process has continued. CCSD did not respond to comments on the notice of preparation. To my knowledge, Coastal staff was not asked for any input when the district was developing the groundwater management plan or the adaptive management plan, which curiously just showed up on the district's website yesterday, I believe, and which I made a comment on in my comments to this agency. That if the district had worked with Coastal staff in particular, I believe we would be further along in the process. But unfortunately, because of the district's failure to communicate, I foresee a very long road ahead. This will not be a slam dunk, that's for sure, as this project will no doubt be appealed to the Coastal Commission. I would ask the board to carefully consider the consequences of a vote to certify the final EIR that is before you today. Thank you for hearing my comments. As we know, it looks as if that's most likely going to be the case. I am not pleased with this EIR at all. I think it was intended to confuse and to confound. and I think it's probably one of the worst documents I have ever read in my life. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickinson. Laura Swartz, followed by Jeff Hellman. See, I do it to myself, too.
Okay. Good afternoon, board and staff and everybody here. Okay, I always get that wrong. Good afternoon, board, staff, and everybody else that happens to be listening. The way I see this, this is not really an all or nothing choice for this EIR. To me, it seems like we should go back to the original way that got passed, that was voted in by the people, that it should be an emergency EIR, and that's all. So it's not that we need to shut down the plant. I mean, a lot of people believe that we should use the plant because we spent millions, and that makes common sense. But not to go any farther, because I don't think you're going to get a lot of communication with the community about that. Anyhow, I also concur with my husband, Crosby, about the costs. Now, the costs do have an impact. I mean, you can't just give a blank check and say, okay, the EIR is going to pass and you can do whatever you want. Because, I mean, you could ship it to the moon and pass the EIR, but it's got to be something that's practical. The people need to know what the costs are going to be for the repurposing of the pond. Are we going to have to reline it in black? I mean, are we going to do the water surface treatments, the trucking? There's so many dollars involved. The people who are going to pay for it that live in this community need to know what we're going to be responsible for. We need to take the time to go back to an emergency permit only. Take the time to review of what the costs are going to be, how we're going to charge them, how are we going to recuperate them. People are going to have to vote in these charges. If they don't, it's not going to work. So that's what I'm saying. The other thing, the EIR is basically based on the BRP, the build-out reduction plan. Now that, and I'm going to speak as a personal person that's been sitting on the board, it's a very complicated situation. There's going to be voting in that to raise funds, and if you don't get the BRP, then the EIR is not going to do you any good. So why not everybody work together, go back to a emergency plant, go back to the community, figure out what the costs are going to be, and get some cooperation, and do it first class, get competitive bids, keep the costs down, and let us know exactly what's happening. Not everybody can afford huge increases. Some can, and that's okay. But that's my plea, is to go back the way it was, because you had to get the, in 30 days, you had to apply for a permanent emergency permit, not a permanent permit. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Swartz. Jeff Hellman, followed by Elizabeth Bettenhausen, and that's the last comment slip I have. If there's anybody else that would like to comment, please get your comment slip in now.
Thank you. Jeff Hellman, member of this community. I was just sent a copy of Tom Lester's letter to, I don't know, I didn't pay attention to who it went out to. It went out to all you guys, I guess. It went out to all the other agencies and stuff. I was just in shock. It was like a total unmitigated disaster is going on here. That thing was 3 pages of concerns he had, of issues that need mitigated, of things that he thought were done wrong, things that have, I mean, you got an environmental impact report that didn't seem to address pages or paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs of things in the environmental impact, you know, of Tom Lester. So you have we spent all this money, my money, your money, the whole community's money, and it's like this EIR is useless because it didn't address probably dozens of different things that they were concerned about. And if you need approval from this agency, it's almost like they must view it like you're flipping them off, trying to bully them into submitting to your desires that you build this plant no matter what and you don't have to do anything that they ask you to do. I know you don't know that you could do that, but there is such a disconnect. And with all the wasting of all this money and all the things that are going wrong, this plant is going to destroy this community economically. I know there's people that want to build because they want to build, and you want to help them build on their lots, and you want to help. But, you know, the bait and switch and the just the unbelievable missteps that the board has taken, especially primarily flipping off the officer who's trying to write you a ticket or something like that. That's not the way to go. You're just doing irreparable damage economically, reputation-wise, and you may never even get to use this plant until you start addressing the issues that are of concern to the Coastal Commission and all the other things. You can't bully your way through this and, you know, make a hit score for the investors and empty lots in this town. It just doesn't work that way. I'm embarrassed to have this board representing me, except for Harry Farmer, of course. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hellman. Elizabeth Bettenhausen, followed by Mary Webb. And then followed by James Spencer. Ms. Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Madam President. I'm Elizabeth Bettenhausen from Cambria for about 15 plus years. I want to begin today because the fragility of life is on my mind as a comprehensive issue and specifically all over the country and the planet today. I want to read to you from this book. I contain multitudes. The microbes within us and a grander view of life. And it's by a brilliant biologist from Britain. A zoology, all zoology, is really ecology. We cannot fully understand the lives of animals without understanding our microbes and our symbioses with them. And we cannot fully appreciate our own microbiome without appreciating how those of our fellow species enrich and influence their lives. We need to zoom out to the entire animal kingdom while zooming in to see the hidden ecosystem that exists in every creature. When we look at beetles and elephants, sea urchins and earthworms, parents and friends, we see individuals working their way through life as a bunch of cells in a single body, driven by a single brain and operating with a single genome. This is a pleasant fiction. In fact, we are legion, each and every one of us. Always a we and never a me. Forget Orson Welles and heed Walt Whitman. I am large, I contain multitudes. And my dear friends, that is the context of my comments to you every single time I speak. I do not like autonomous individualism as it shows up with the CCSD. And I want to remind you that in my comments, which I've sent to you and which are in the public record now, I pointed out the serious conflict of fact over Kettleman City and the Southern District. If you approve that today, you are approving simply a lie in your document. Now, I want to agree with a woman from Oceano. I don't know her. Brilliant. She points out to the problem of Bio-15 and the modifications, and you don't have a biological base yet. How can you compare if you don't have a biological base? And we've been saying that for approximately 7 years. I would like to point out another thing, and that is the brilliance of the people who are pointing out to financial issues. This is not going to cost a penny and a mite, not even my favorite red velvet mite on the rocks at the beach. This is going to cost a little bit more. How much is my question? I know that you aren't going to act today because you belatedly got to that moderated plan thing that came out yesterday. Well, read it. It's not very good, but at least it should be read. And the final thing I want to do is read a bit about significant environmental point. One paragraph, ma'am. I do not like how these are defined by the dear people from Michael Thompson. We disagree on truth. Everybody disagrees on truth today. But unless we start paying attention to the contextual meaning of truth, like in here or in the documents from you, we will not ever get to the point where we can look at the common good. I understand truth as incomprehensible, widely environmentally designated statements. And I don't look at them as little narrow statements that we can say nobody in all of the public comment that was made about this document that you're looking at today. You are saying that nobody had a significant thing that had to be paid attention to. We have to agree, ma'am, on some course of action we can take in this body so that you can deliberate among yourselves and with us about what might constitute the truth. Because otherwise, we're going down the drain. Oops, I didn't want to bring up the question of leaks. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. Mr. Thompson.
For the record, I just want to make sure that, Ms. Bettenhausen, I have no relationship with Michael Baker. You Yes, ma'am.
It's been exhausting dealing with this. I'm sure you know.
Thank you very much.
Mary Webb, followed by James Spencer, which is the last slip that I now have. Ms.
Mary
Webb.
Just speaking as a citizen. I just want to summarize one regulatory agency's letter that describes some of the major hurdles this EIR still does not overcome. The document does not adequately evaluate known or likely impacts to riparian, wetland, and stream areas designated under the LCP as sensitive habitat, does not identify adequate mitigation measures to address those adverse impacts. The volume and location of proposed mitigation flows would not avoid or minimize likely or identified habitat and species impacts. There does not appear to be sufficient water available to the CCSD to operate the project as proposed. The project does not appear to be consistent with the LCP's flood hazard avoidance policies. The project is evaluated in the EIR, as evaluated in the EIR, would not allow for the levels of growth anticipated in the document. The project's described repurpose of the project's evaporation basin will create a wildlife hazard, but the document does not evaluate those hazards. The project description is inconsistent with the CCSD's current proposal to address problems with the basin. The adaptive management plan, written in 2015, was rewritten and not available to the public, which I guess at least the blue shirts probably know that. That's why they're not here today. That plan was written to analyze the environmental impacts from an emergency project, not a growth-inducing sustainable water supply project with significantly more impacts. You can't just change the name of emergency to sustainable in an adaptive management plan or the groundwater management plan, for that matter. The groundwater management plan of 2015 was written with the emergency project as the water supply, not a growth-inducing sustainable water supply with the appropriate impacts that will entail. We need in-stream flow studies for both San Simeon and Santa Rosa Creeks. We need water quality monitoring programs to protect iconic species. We need a build-out reduction program to mitigate growth. We need a Cambria forest management plan and a forest ecologist hired to protect Monterey pines. We need a habitat conservation plan now to protect San Simeon Creek and Santa Rosa Creek. None of these plans have been created. There is no money for them. There's no process of implementation. There's no mitigation for what you think you're going to be doing. The costs for that are absolutely immeasurable. I'm speaking as a citizen because I think it's time for ratepayers to probably file a ratepayer lawsuit against what is being happening in this district. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Webb. James Spencer, followed by Constance Gannon.
Yes, my name is Jim Spencer. I live in Pasadena. I'm a member of UNLOC, that group of nasty developers who are going to come and destroy this community. I might mention that there are only 650 water positions available in the growth plan, and that would represent one person for every five people that are already in this room if these were homeowners. Daryl Robinson couldn't make it today on very short notice. I was asked to come up. I'm not representing UNLOC formally, but I'm aware of you, the fact that you're going into closed session. And just to simply say that we represent maybe 100 strong people, that could be a potential war chest, and it's been 16 years that this moratorium has gone on, and people have been paying property taxes for property they can't use. I got a subscription to the Cambrian newspaper when I, it was 16 years ago actually, and I've been tracking the community as well as the construction. This community now has really two social classes. There are the homeowners, the upper class, and the renters who rent space from the homeowners. And the renters are the ones who clean the toilets, wash the dishes, trim the beautiful gardens that are so beguiling to the visitors, but they belie a kind of ugly truth that there's no middle class left in this community. There are no contractors. There's been no construction. There are very few middle class jobs that would allow a person to buy a house here. The housing prices are inflated because there are no new houses being built. I personally could afford to buy one. I actually have cash to build my home here. But I would never buy an existing house and further inflate the price of real estate here. We urge you to pass the EIR and move on to the next step. This has been going on. This is nonsense. First, it was a sewage treatment plant 30 years ago. And now, of course, it's water, and I'm sure it'll be something else in the future. But there are people out there who would like to become members of this community who are just like you. I'm an architect. I was the architect of Cuesta College for over 20 years. I built most of the buildings that you see there. I came to love this area, came to learn a lot about Cambria. My grandparents were from England, and they said Cumbria. There you are. And so adding our numbers will improve the viability of the community. We'll have more ratepayers. You'll be able to address some of the infrastructure problems. It's really a positive thing, and we hope that you will approve the EIR. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spencer. Ms. Gannon, it's my final request to speak today.
Good afternoon, Board. And I'm speaking on behalf of Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust, of which I'm the executive director. I wanted to point out some mitigation measures that Green Space suggested in our letter of October 2016 in response to the draft SEIR. We pointed out that one of the mitigations that might be very helpful would be a San Simeon Creek watershed management plan, which has never been developed or implemented. San Simeon Creek has been kind of the stepchild of creeks in this watershed area, and we believe it's time to get true and adequate data on the condition of the creek, the viability of the habitats, the nature and number of the threatened, endangered, and species of concerns that exist in that creek. And these are the baseline numbers that Steph Wald was referring to earlier, and which we still do not have. And how we can do an adaptive management plan based on no baseline is really beyond me. We need to do hydrological research. We need to know more about the nature of the groundwater basin under San Simeon Creek. We need to know what this wedge is that we're assuming that we're taking water from as part of the, I forget what it's called now, sustainable water facility. And also, as I mentioned before, we do need a biological baseline, not just for the creek, but also for the lagoon. This is really critical. We had incidents of cyanobacteria in the lagoon and in the evaporation pond last year. This is not a small deal. It's very important. So I would ask that in whatever EIR we eventually come up with, that these mitigation measures are taken into account, because these are actual mitigations that address the actual impact of the plant. The build-out reduction plan does not in any way address the impact of the plant on the San Simeon Creek watershed. So we would ask that you consider actual measures that would provide not only adequate mitigation, but also would provide a baseline for any implementation of the adaptive management plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate everybody's testimony today. I think the next thing up would be if any of the directors have any comments that they would like to make, or I don't know if Ms. Garcia would like to respond to any of the particular comments at this time.
Yes, I'd like to hear from Michael Baker Company about some of the comments that have been made here and get their assessment of those comments.
Yeah, and I have a couple of comments on the comments.
And I would like, if Michael Baker International gets up, I'd like to them to point out their experience in this particular, just briefly explain the process that they've gone through, who they've done this for before, the little more on the scope, and just overcome the thought that this was just quickly taken care of. I think that and their expertise in the area is important.
I agree. Were there specific comments that you wanted to hear responses to, or just some of the? Okay.
Okay, as President Rice mentioned, I was trying to get every single comment. Obviously, there were many, many comments that I have missed, but I did my best to write down as many of them as I could. The only thing I could do is start from the beginning and, you know, maybe highlight some of the recurring comments. I'd also like to maybe... because there is a continuation, if there is an opportunity for us to go back and digest and present a formalized response as opposed to a, you know, trying to interpret my scribbling, and I would be concerned over doing that in such short notice.
Mr. LaJoy.
Glenn LaJoy with Michael Baker. Excuse me. The hearing is also being recorded this afternoon, so despite possible misnotations, we can go back and reaffirm what took place in terms of testimony.
Director Thompson, would that be okay with you if we have? Okay, so we can let them go back and digest that and provide comments. Is that acceptable for the other directors as well? Thank you,
President Rice. In the meantime, I think it was Director Beringer that asked, and I think, please correct me if I misinterpreted your question, was your question, what experience does Michael Baker International have with preparing responses to comments? I'm sorry, I really didn't fully understand what your question was.
Well, there's a process that you went through, and the presentation told us what the process was, and I understand that. But you have experience; you've done this for other agencies, and you've done your firm has. My assumption is has done this in the past, and I would just like to have you take a moment to explain some of that experience that you've had and what you do.
Okay, certainly, Director Beringer. So Glenn and I have been working together in the environmental field for nearly 30 years. So during that time, we have had the pleasure of serving a broad range of agencies, as well as the private sector. We have served everything from public utilities to counties to special other districts to universities to colleges, a broad range of agencies. During that time, we've also prepared every aspect of compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act. We've prepared mitigated negative declarations from everything for development of a single-family dwelling unit on one property to development of, 5 million square feet of non-commercial uses. I mean, everything, including utility infrastructure projects. At current, for example, I am presently working on a full-blown 60 MGD EIR for a desal facility in LA County. So our experience with the district specifically goes back, over 20 years in assisting the district in all aspects of their environmental clearance, from pipelines to their water master plan to individual basins. I mean, just everything during that time frame.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Certainly.
Thank you. I have a couple of responses that I can provide to a couple of the comments. One, and or at least my reaction to some of the comments. First one is was raised that a San Simeon Creek watershed management plan should be developed. In 2013, after I had just joined the board, a group of San Simeon Creek riparian landowners had got together and over several different meetings and with the help of somebody from the Upper Salinas Las Tablas Resource Conservation District looked at what that might mean for them. And they did eventually decide they did not want to go forward on that. It's not something that we can do alone if we're going to manage the watershed. We need to be managing it with everybody that is along the watershed. And because they were not in favor of doing that at the time, it may be time to approach them again and see if that's still the case. But back in 2013, we did make an attempt to go in that direction. And I attended those meetings, and they decided that it wasn't a direction they wanted to go. The issue of cost, the rates for the emergency water supply that were passed in 2014 to cover the cost of the installment sale and to cover the operations for the plant did not contemplate some of the additional project modifications that are in this specific EIR. And I do think that that's an issue that the board needs to look at. And I think it's important to note that the project purpose and objectives as described in the project description, which is 3.3, is something that I think this board would do well to look at these goals and objectives to determine that these are the goals and objectives we do want to have going forward. I made 5 copies of that, and we don't have to discuss it today since we're going to have a continuance of this discussion, it sounds like. But I think that it would behoove us to have this discussion as a public discussion about what the purpose and objectives are so that everybody's clear on them. Couple of little things that, as I was reading through this, I'm very pleased with the fact that we have so many people working on getting all of this information together and under deadline trying to get this done. A lot of really hard and good work has gone into this project from the very beginning up to this point and going forward. I hope it continues. To have 9 days to review all those years of work as a board member with a job other than this, I'm not pleased the AMP was so late coming out, but am glad that we're going to have some additional time to review this because I do not want to certify something that I don't feel like I've fully considered and reviewed. I don't know how the other directors feel, but for me personally, I'm pleased about that specifically. I have a question. And then I think I will stop with the other comments that I had. But I have a question on the Exhibit A, the CEQA findings, that I need to have clarified before I can consider passing the resolution, even though we're not doing it today. The second full paragraph at the end, it says, following completion of the SEIR's CEQA process, the CCSD will update its February 27, 2017 regular CDP application to include the project modifications described within the final SEIR. It's not very clear to me what changes would need to be made and what kind of effects that might have on the cost of operating, the cost of capital improvements that would be required, cost of maintaining those improvements. And it isn't just about cost, but decommissioning the evaporation pond is something that's definitely going to happen. Whether or not we can fold in repurposing it as a freshwater pond. It's clearly a good goal to have extra water storage available. I'm not sure that's something that should be included in this particular project. Decommissioning, yes. Repurposing with the additional surface water treatment plant, I'm not sure that the impacts of those things are fully explored in this EIR. I understand why they've been folded in, but my concern is, being an alum of NCAC, you see a permit, and the thing that ends up getting built is nothing what the original permit looked like. I don't want that to happen here when I'm making a decision to certify an EIR for a certain thing, and then we end up with something else. So that's, I would like clarified how that particular thing, how the permit might be amended. If anybody can give me an answer today, if you can't give me an answer today, I can take an answer when we come back and have the continued discussion on this. Mr. Carmel?
We don't have a permit. We have an application pending for a permit. We would simply, to the extent we're making project modifications, which are articulated in the EIR, we would revise our application with the county to reflect those changes.
And where my concern is I'm not clear which modifications. There's described in the alternatives, there's an environmentally superior alternative, but it doesn't look like that's the alternative that we're choosing as part of our project. It looks like we're doing project with modifications. Is that correct?
Well, as you know, there are three major modifications that are set forth, that are mitigation measures. Those are the three that we would be talking about.
Can somebody tell me why we're not doing the environmentally superior alternative as described in the EIR alternatives?
President Rice, to speak to your question regarding the alternatives before I speak to that, you asked about the degree of environmental analysis of the project modifications. In my presentation early on, there was one point, there was a slide that showed the approach to the EIR analysis, and the impact analysis was intentionally broken up into two parts to facilitate the public's review of each project component depending on what stage in development it was. So the second portion of each impact analysis has its own analysis of implementing all of those project modifications, which included AES2, the mitigation measures that we were talking about. Concerning the alternatives, you are correct. So we have the alternative section has a section that identifies alternatives considered but rejected. It has an alternative that considered disposal of the RO concentrate at a off-site outfall. And so the environmental impact analysis in that alternative section considered the environmental impacts of disposing that alternative, the RO concentrate at the farthest outfall. As has been mentioned, your question is what project or which combination of modifications will be considered. So I think what I wanted to communicate is the impacts analyzed in the alternative section for the ocean outfall assumed an outfall of over 160 miles away for delivery of the RO brine. The permit that has been obtained is for a much closer, the South County Sanitation District outfall, and so the environmental impacts associated with that are covered in that alternative.
Right.
As far as the trucking of the brine and the noise associated with the trucking, the emissions associated with the trucking.
Okay. I'm not sure that fully answers my question, but I don't know if the answer can be fully.
I can tag on a little bit if that's.
Mr. Okay. Gressens.
Yeah, I'm present. I'm looking at Rita's earlier slide, and there's bulleted points in there for the AES2, and it's really dealing with decommissioning the evaporation pond. So it's removing the five, this would be as a minimum, removing the five mechanical spray evaporators, decommission the pond, and we'd have to put in the four Baker tanks to allow off-hauling of that RO concentrate. So that'd be as a minimum for AES-2. Then for Bio-3, it's relocating the lagoon surface water discharge closer to the creek bank. So that's essentially the minimum approach we would do. The other proposed modifications are to primarily improve reliability, and I think there's some flexibility on whether you want to go forward with that in the future application update or not, because it is a cost issue. That's the surface water treatment plant and the related piping associated with that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Mr. Sanders, Vice President Sanders.
Thank you. I just want to cover a couple of things. Number one, I think that at least one speaker and perhaps others very unfairly maligned Michael Baker International. Anybody who is familiar with those companies that produce environmental impact reports understand that Michael Baker International is one of the preeminent environmental impact consultants in the world. And so we have the very best talent available that produced this final EIR. Glenn LaJoy is here. Glenn, you were with RBF before Michael Baker. Michael Baker acquired RBF. You stayed with the company. How many of the EIRs that you produced were challenged in court? Two? Is that right?
Glenn LaJoy, Michael Baker International. This summer will be my 30th year with the firm. There have been a small handful of legal challenges, but we have been successful in those legal challenges basically every time.
I'm trying to remember. I recall three that were challenged, three environmental impact reports or other environmental documents that you produced. And in each and every case, the challenges to those environmental documents were unsuccessful. The district prevailed.
Correct.
You've been with the company for 30 years, so you are the continuity between RBF and Michael Baker International. You're the project director for this particular project, this final EIR. So I think the public should know that one of the most competent environmental impact report experts in the world has been managing this project. It is not a half-baked EIR. It is a very professionally done environmental impact report that complies with all of the requirements of the California Environmental Quality Act. Okay. Secondly, there was a statement that was made that somehow the district has been negligent because we haven't been interfacing with the California Coastal Commission. The truth of the matter is we have. I don't know where Mr. Hellman got his information, but and Tina Dickerson as well, but we have been interfacing with the Coastal Commission. I participated in at least two meetings. We had a meeting set up with the executive director for a few weeks ago. Unfortunately, it was canceled by the executive director. But we'll continue our interface with the Coastal Commission. What you have to understand is we have an independent requirement to do an environmental impact report. And we do that free of any kind of pressure that we might get from the public, from other public agencies. We have to make an independent analysis of the environmental impacts associated with this plant. By the time this project gets to the Coastal Commission, understand that the Coastal Commission is a certified regulatory agency in California. That means whatever the Coastal Commission does is considered to be compliant with the California Environmental Quality Act. So the commission has independent authority to impose conditions of approval that the commission believes are necessary to mitigate any environmental impacts associated with this project.
That's the way the process works. So we have not been negligent in terms of interfacing with the Coastal Commission. Finally, I want to express my disappointment. We have been at this EIR for a long time. Please refresh my recollection. When was the meeting that we had here in this building where we invited the public to comment on the draft EIR? Early October of last year, correct? Okay, the public was invited. Glenn LaJoy from Michael Baker International was the moderator. We had just a handful of people who commented. That was the time to bring the issues that many of you have brought to us today to our attention, because that was the critical point at which your input would have made a big difference. It is really too late in the game to be bringing a lot of these issues to our attention today, because the work product, the final EIR, is now finished. And Madam President, I'm really disappointed in some of the questions that you've raised today. You and I have been meeting almost weekly with the EIR team, and these issues could have been raised months ago. And now, at the 11th hour, you're raising them? I think it's very disingenuous.
I would have raised them at the meeting we had planned on Monday.
Even Monday is too late. They should have been raised 6 months ago.
I'm going to provide these project purpose and objectives to each of you so that you don't have to go and find it. It's part of the EIR.
Yes, it is.
And I think that it's important for us to have a discussion on this, because these purposes are different than the original purposes that this project was approved for, which back in 2014. So I think it's incumbent upon us to have the public discussion about this. Director Farmer.
Thank you. I looked through the document that's been presented to us from Michael Baker International, and when they're addressing the various environmental issues, I see mainly less than significant impacts, not cumulatively considerable, less than significant impacts, reduced to less than significant, less than significant impacts would be less than significant. And yet, I look at the comment that we got from Tom Lester from the California Coastal Commission, you know, the very highly regarded, highly respected senior environmental advisor. And so he sent out this five-page item here, and what he says with regard to the EIR, the SEIR, this document does not adequately evaluate known or likely impacts on riparian, wetland, and stream areas designated as sensitive habitat, and does not identify adequate mitigation measures to address those adverse impacts. There does not appear to be sufficient water available to the CCSD to operate the project as proposed. SEIR described repurposing of the project's evaporation basin will create a wildlife hazard, but the document does not evaluate these hazards. The SEIR description is also inconsistent with the CCSD's current proposal to address problems with the basin. I'm not going to quarrel with the professionalism of Michael Baker International. All I'm saying here is we have a serious difference of opinion, and the community needs to be aware of that. The people at the California Coast, let's put it this way, the people at the state who are to oversee impacts on the environment are very questioning of this document and also this project. I'd also like to address the financial dilemma that this project continues to present to us. So what we have now is the evaporation pond that is going to have to be dismantled. We don't know the cost of that, but if I'm not mistaken, one of the things Director Sanders and I don't usually agree on things, but I think both of us have made the comment that the cost of doing that may run close to $1 million. The fact that we're going to have a new storage facility next to the one that we already have, we don't know how much that is going to, a water treatment facility, we don't know how much that is going to cost. We pay money for blowers and the containment structures around them. They're a failure. The evaporation pond is a failure. We don't know the cost of this new surface water treatment plant. We don't know the cost of the Baker tanks that are going to be used as a result. I hate to say this, and you know, I see in the document here on page 5, the SEIR, page 3, where it's also mentioned again that the concentrate that's going to be put into the Baker tanks would be hauled off site daily to the Kettleman Hills Hazardous Waste Facility for treatment and disposal. This would result in as many as 10 round trips per day to Kettleman. And as I pointed out when we had our first candidates forum, that is the equivalent of a round trip from Cambria to Bend, Oregon and back every day. And we're talking about the pollution that would be generated by these vehicles, the cost of these vehicles, not to mention the karmic debt that is being accrued by this facility to this community. And the only way that this project will ultimately be paid for is by more, how could I say this? By who knows how many numbers of intent to serve letters that is going to hugely impact, let's say, the aesthetics of this community. And even at the last meeting, Director Barringer said, well, what we're going to have to do is widen some streets, you know, pave them over. I've seen streets widened and paved over in Morro Bay. I don't want to see that happen here. We need to take a serious look at the impact of this project and what it's ultimately going to mean to this community environmentally, financially, and just basically, we need to live in harmony with the planet, with Mother Earth, and this community that we live in. It's loved for the way it is right now. That's all I have to say.
Director Thompson.
Yeah, I'm glad Director Farmer brought up that issue. And let me say that, you know, I'm a farm boy from Wisconsin, and you know, I have as much concern about the red-legged frogs that are out there as anyone. And in fact, my grandfather used to take a gunny sack out in the fields and catch green-legged frogs and sell them to the local restaurants. And you know, that's a really important thing, but not to the point. I'm glad that Mr. Spencer came to speak up today. He's representing the group that some folks would consider the deplorables, and meaning the waitlist folks who for some 16 years have been paying property taxes, have been clearing their lots, and have had a desire at some point in time to build on those lots that they're paying property taxes on. Certainly one of the ways that we can finance needed infrastructure would be on connections for those lots. One of the things that I think we need to consider is that not only do we have 650 people out there who have been contributing to this community without being able to enjoy any of the benefits of this community, our population is down some 200 in the last census, and that's because folks are dying and new folks aren't moving here. The one thing I would disagree with Mr. Spencer on is that it's not the workers that rent here. Certainly they can't afford the rents here, but I'm sure that they would like to. The young folks that would want to come in and use our schools can't afford to live here. We're losing folks. We're losing businesses. When I first moved here 17 years ago, we had two hardware stores. We had a paint store. We had a carpet store. We had contractors that worked. We have none of that now. This town, and I think as you suggested, this town is going to dry up, and a lot of folks would like that to happen. So I think we need to consider the fact that that we need to have some degree of growth in this community so that we can pay for these things that needed to be paid for and provide an opportunity for people that that should want to live here and not want to live across the hill and commute here every day to work.
Could I please ask the folks that are here, please be respectful when directors are talking? I'd really appreciate it. I know people have lots of differences of opinion about this town, but we need to be respectful. Doesn't mean it's right. Thank you, Director Thompson. Final thing.
Madam President?
Yes, Director Barringer.
I just would like to clarify something. When I like dirt roads as much as anybody else, you know, it's quaint, but we also have a responsibility for safety. I don't like to see roads, wide roads paved, and I think the issue came up on parking and trying to be able to getting a fire truck through. We do need, you know, I like the idea of everybody being able to park where they want, but they shouldn't. We have a safety issue. So don't misinterpret the fact that I think this isn't a great place to stay. This is a great place to live, but it was pointed out, scarcity will drive the price up. The less of something there is, the more costly it's going to be. If some development was conducted, that extra price where someone can demo a house and eliminate something from the area, instead of a new construction is built, that scarcity will evaporate. Well, it won't evaporate completely, but it'll be diminished, and prices will moderate. That's just a law of economics.
All right, before we... do I need to take a motion on the continue?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
I move that we continue.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second the motion with a clarification to a date uncertain.
To a date uncertain.
And, as part of that, what is the amount of time that you anticipate that document now that the mitigation measures are being looked at, or the
we'll coordinate that with the president and vice president.
Can we maybe have an announcement at the next maybe regular meeting?
Sure, I assume by then we'll know.
We'll have a better idea because we want to get the responses to the comments that were made today too.
Right, I did want to just follow up on regional boards, water board staff's comments. We take them very seriously, and when we do return, we'll be sure to address them appropriately.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. Just as a final comment, I'm here to represent the citizens of Cambria, and I would like to point out that for over a year when the EIR committee, which was made up of former President Gail Robinette and Mr. Sanders, Vice President Sanders, that whole time we would get reports that the draft was proceeding as scheduled. the time that I've been president and participating in those meetings has been entirely focused on responses to comments that were made, not the central part. So those conference calls were not focused on the main meat of the EIR, but rather the comments and responses to them. So I'd just like to, I represent this community and I try to, I take this is a very serious process, and I think that the fact that we're continuing it because of the AMP is entirely appropriate. This is an important and serious thing that has consequences that we must be certain of. We need to be able to come together as a board and agree and find that each of us is comfortable with what we're looking at certifying here, because this is one of the most important things that we will do probably for a really long time. So with that, let's have a vote. Monique, would you call the roll, please?
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Vice President Sanders?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
President Rice?
Aye. Thank you. Is there any public comment on closed session? Then, Mary Webb.
We've been having closed session meetings here for, I think I've been coming to these meetings since maybe 2003. I don't think I have ever seen or heard some kind of a result of what has happened in closed session. I mean, rarely. Maybe four times have I heard the district ever come back to the community to tell them what they're talking about behind closed doors. And, you know, is there some way we can remedy that? Don't we have a right to know who's suing us, why they're suing us, how much it's going to cost to defend us? All these, I mean, we never get to hear the result. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that comment. And I would like to try and get an answer for you when we report back out of closed session, which is going to be at the next meeting, correct?
We'll do it both up there and at the next meeting.
Okay, so we'll make an announcement out of closed session after we meet today, and then we will at the beginning of the next meeting, which is June 22nd, and it starts at 6 p.m. this time. So thank you very much. We're adjourned to closed session.